I'd like to thank Mr. Hancock for doing the introduction to my sermon. It saved me 15 minutes. You saw the book I'm going to be quoting from. It's got a hand on the front with an apple, for those of you who are on the internet. And it's called The Marketing of Evil. And Mr. Hancock said, we have to go against the grain. Talking about the present evil world, Satan's world. We're called out, he said, but still affected. So if you want a title, we're going to title it End Time Evil. Well, first of all, the problem. Let's just set the scene first. Turn to 1 Peter 5, verse 8. We know the problem. We're living at the end of 6,000 years of Satan's rule. Satan knows that the return of Christ is relatively imminent. He knows his days could be numbered as far as he's concerned, although he probably in his perverted way still thinks that he can win. But he's angry. He's going around like a roaring lion seeking whom he can devour. And that anger is not directed at 6 billion people on the face of this planet. It's directed at a very few people who are trying their best to put the commandments of God into their lives and get rid of sin. This is why we are told to pray daily, rescue us, deliver, the King James says. The word is rescue us from the evil one. 1 Peter 5 verse 8, be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary the devil walks about like a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour. The situation is so serious for us that we are told to put on armor. If you've got to face a lion, shorts and t-shirt and flip-flops aren't going to do you much good. They really aren't. Ephesians 6:13, you all know the scripture. Wherefore take unto you the whole armour of God, not bits of it, all of it, that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand. What are Satan's main weapons? What are we fighting against? Well, first of all, we've got lies. John 8:44. I think the scripture's been read a couple of times in the last week, but it bears reading again, unless I can find John. John 8 and verse 44. Christ, of course, talking to the scribes and the Pharisees, many of whom, I might add, are lawyers. I'll be talking about them a bit later. You are of your father. This is John 8:44. You are of your father the devil, and the desires of your father you want to do. This is not just Christ talking to the scribes and the Pharisees. He's talking to the whole world, basically. He was a murderer from the beginning and does not stand in the truth, because there is no truth in him. When he speaks a lie, he speaks from his own resources, for he is a liar and the father of it. Right back in Genesis, remember? Go on, eat it. You won't die. It's nice. In fact, when you eat it, you'll become like God. You'll be able to decide what's good and evil. Look what that God's trying to keep you away from. He doesn't want you to be like him. He wants to keep you under thumb. Get rid of him. Eat that thing. Get the mind. You decide. That's what this world's doing, isn't it? They're making the laws. The tragedy is now we're starting to pass laws that go diametrically against the law of God. And if that thing that's flying around here would kindly leave the doors over there. We have a nice big wasp or something flying around here. It's all right, it'll go now. It's been told, I hope. In 1918, U.S. Senator Hiram Warren Johnson said, the first casualty when war comes is truth. There's about to be a murder. Well done. Mr. Bowles has just destroyed the enemy. It did fall on the floor, I saw it. Yes. Now we can all relax. Isn't it amazing, you know? There's all these great big hulking people in here, and there's a little wasp an inch long flying around, and everybody's following it very closely. Isn't it interesting that when God wanted to drive the nations out before Israel, that he sent in hornets? Not elephants and lions and cheetahs and things, just a little swarm of hornets. The second thing Satan uses is deception. Turn to Revelation 12, verse 9. Again, a scripture we all know. But you'll see the road I'm going down in a couple of minutes, as I want to show you it's very, very important. So the great dragon was cast out, the serpent of old, called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world. So when you're driving down the motorway and somebody cuts you up, you know why. That person is deceived, as is the person behind you, in front of you, and by the side of you. It's pretty terrifying. It's one of the hardest things. It's one of the things that a lot of people who've left the church have used, saying, can we be the only people that are right? Yes. In a nutshell. And how many people are there? Maybe there are a few thousand around the earth that are trying their best to obey God. But remember, when Jesus Christ walked on this earth for 3.5 years, telling the world of what was going to happen. Utopia, peace, with him ruling. No more war, no more tears, no more suffering. Universal prosperity. They murdered him. And all those who followed him, how many were at Pentecost? 120. I find that stunning. So should we be amazed today when there's only maybe a few thousand people, hopefully a few thousand people around the world, who are actually trying their best to obey God? It's totally stunning. Chinese 5th century general Sun Tzu. Sounds like a restaurant, doesn't it? He said the principle for the conduct of war was that all warfare is based on deception. What did we do when we invaded France? When we went back over there in the war? We sent over planes loaded with little bits of silver paper. And they dropped them in little loads. And on the German radar, they saw this huge armada of aircraft coming towards them. And they diverted their troops to where they were going, thinking that that was going to be an airborne landing with paratroopers and such like. And guess what? We snuck across the English Channel and only had to fight against the third. And there's another wasp coming in. Just stand still. We're getting very good at this. I wish you could have seen that on the internet. My son, the wasp landed on my wife's head, and it was about 1.25 inches long, and he flicked it. Well, Mr. Bowles, an exquisite pirouette, and landed on it. Rest in peace. All warfare is based on deception. I'll just interject here. Many, many years ago, down in South Africa, we had a camp out, and we were all sitting on the Sabbath in our suits, on bales of straw, in a barn. And the minister was standing at the lectern with his back to the door. And he gave a sermon on sort of concentration, not being knocked off track. And he was going on about this whole thing about, you know, just keep yourself there. And in came a flock of sheep. And they walked right down the one aisle, right down the other aisle, and they surrounded him. And he just sort of stood there, you know. Yes, keep concentration on in spite of the wasps. 2 Corinthians 4:4, we're told Satan is the god of this world. This is Satan's world. If you look out there now, what you see is what Satan wants, not what God wants. God says, build not house upon house. What do? How many do we get on an acre now? 150 houses on an acre. How do you guys sleep at night? I thought he was talking about battery chickens. It's battery people, isn't it? Don't put land upon land, it says. So what do? we put land upon land. Mr. Waterhouse always said in the millennium that each person's plot would be separated by a piece of, call it public land. Free for the animals to roam. Free for the birds to nest, to come onto your crops and eat the bugs. Places for the kids to play safely. Where to keep your pet lion. Or whatever. This is Satan's world. Will there be computers in the millennium? I doubt it. Because that's Satan's tool. We make use of it. We make use of it. Just at the time when we really, really needed that technology, it's provided. But that's the way the world works. Why? Satan's plan is to destroy mankind. Our whole life now is controlled by that system, that internet, those computers. Do you know why? Because one H-bomb exploded 100 miles above America would wipe out most of the computers instantaneously. Most cars would stop running. In fact, even some electric kettles wouldn't work because they've got a microchip in them. They get fried by the electromagnetic waves. Years ago, disenchanted Russian gentleman, pilot, decided to escape to Japan in a Foxbat. That was that, at that time, that was Russia's top fighter. He landed in Japan, and of course the Americans pounced on it, ripped it apart, and laughed. Because all the electronics inside were valves. Valves! The guy's got to start his plane that way for 5 minutes, like the old days with the TV, while the picture comes up, you know? And then they made an amazing discovery. Valves can withstand an atomic explosion and still work. Chips can't. They fry. You see what Satan's done? He's got us relying on that wretched stuff. He's got us relying on supermarkets. What happens when the truck can't get to the supermarket? It doesn't take 6 months or a year or 7 years to get a famine. It takes a week. In fact, it's probably going to take 2 or 3 hours. Once the word goes out, the supermarket shelves will empty and there won't be any food for anybody. Satan has created a world where we literally are living on a knife edge. Where there are means where the whole of civilization can be destroyed several different ways. Satan is the god of this world. Matthew 24:11, you also know, and it talks about many false prophets, and they shall deceive many. Now that could be talking about people who are talking about the word of God. It's been certainly talking about people in God's church at one stage, who got up and led a whole load of people astray. It's talking about scientists. They talk about global warming. The government say, aha, another way to tax you. And you can bet over the next few years, they're going to tax us and tax us and tax us. Is global warming a problem? Well, yes. Are we causing it? We're contributing to it. But it's happened over the centuries. But you see, as we come to the end, we're coming into a warm phase. And we're adding jets flying in great altitude, dumping stuff at 30,000 feet. We've got industry pumping out amazing amounts of rubbish. We've got the new economies in India and China. They don't care about pollution. They're just belching it out. There are two open cast coal mines in China that have self-ignited. They are producing half of the harmful gases that are going up into the atmosphere. Is anybody doing anything about it? Nope. Why? It costs too much money. Haven't got the time. Gog and Magog are too busy arming themselves to the teeth. And they're going to overtake us in many, many ways in trade. America had to go cap in hand to China a few months back because the trade deficit with China, I believe, is $1.2 trillion. And the Chinese are starting to dump those dollars in favor of euros. And if they dump too many dollars, the value of the dollar is going to collapse. The dollar is literally on a knife edge. See, we go everywhere we go, things are on a knife edge. Literally, it doesn't matter what you look at. Why? Turn to 2 Timothy. Again, these are scriptures we all know. But I just want to set the scene before I go into some of the things that are in this book. Because the world we live in is truly amazing. We produce, on the one hand, things that are staggering. We take a little spaceship and we aim it, I think it's aimed at the sun. We spin it around the sun and we slingshot it into space someplace. It arrives in, say, Mars or Jupiter or wherever. It then does a flyby, sending back not just photographs, colour photographs, infrared photographs, ultraviolet photographs, giving us knowledge of the universe. Mr. Armstrong the other day was talking about it. Those ones from Mars. But we've been to Jupiter. We've photographed the different moons around Jupiter. And guess what? Mr. Armstrong was right again. All you see is destruction. And yet there are tens of thousands of people out there who, putting it in the vernacular, hate Mr. Armstrong's guts. They call him a false prophet. And they accuse, I personally have been accused of worshipping him. Some of you have as well. Why? 2 Timothy 3 verse 1. This is what we are dealing with. But know this, that in the last days, which is where we are now, perilous times will come. For men will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedience to parents, if they've got any to be disobedient to, I might add, unthankful, unholy, unloving, unforgiving, slanderers, without self-control, brutal, just walking up to somebody in the street and shooting them to pinch a mobile phone, or as Mr. Hancock mentioned, over a parking place, or because he's a member of another gang. And later on I'll show you why he's a member of another gang. There's a very good reason for it. Despisers of good. What did Mr. Armstrong preach? Universal utopia. People despise it because they think this is what is good. Having a form of godliness, and again we'll have a look at that in a few minutes, but denying its power. You'll find so many people say, oh, they go to church, but they don't really believe that God has got anything to do with their life. So why are they going to church? It says, from such people turn away. You can just write down Romans 1:28, because we know this section, you probably quote it backwards. But even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a debased mind to do those things which are not fitting. Being filled with all unrighteousness, sexual immorality, wickedness, oh, he's gone and on and on and on and on. Who knowing the righteousness of God, verse 32, they that practice those things are worthy of death. Not only do they do these things, but they also approve of those who practice them. And the key is here, and they are against anyone who doesn't follow their evil ways, and they're especially against anyone who shows up their evil ways. That's what we are going to be facing. And this is modern day Egypt. Welcome. And the news is, it's getting worse on a daily basis. It says in Matthew 10:18 that some are going to be arrested. Some of God's people are going to be arrested and dragged through the courts. Why? Are we a threat to anyone? And according to Mr. Hancock, we're not supposed to get upset if somebody cuts us up on the motorway. And we're not. We shouldn't. What did Christ do when he saw a Roman coming towards him with a great big spear, having been beaten, spat upon, whipped, stoned, treated like no other person's been treated? And he turned around and said, Father, forgive him. They don't know what they're doing. That's the sort of attitude we've got to come to eventually. I say eventually because I hope we make it. But that's the attitude that Christ had. He could have just turned around and said, Father, this isn't working. Zap him. Let's try again. Let's try something else. This isn't working. And then he had to endure the fact that God turned his back on him. Unbelievable. But that was all done for us. What have we done that's so wrong then? We're putting out all Mr. Armstrong's information. What about? Basically, about the coming government of God. No. No need to. I've been living on the farm. The family's been living down with the Morgans on the farm. Car's been lying unlocked. House is unlocked. Don't really bother with locking the door for anyway. Never use it. It creates a whole different attitude. The things you haven't got to worry about. You've got to worry about that goat pinching your wine if you're not careful. An alcoholic goat. I never thought I'd see the day. Old Boris likes his wine. So you keep your wine glass away from him. What are people being offered? They're being offered everything they want. There's only one snag. There's only one way to get it, and they can't go down that road. At the end of this age, Matthew 24, verse 9, just make a note of it. It says, we will be hated of all nations. Why? For my name's sake. For my authority's sake. Because that's what Jesus Christ is coming back with. He's not coming this time riding on an ass. The gentle Jesus, meek and mild, that the evangelicals want to keep on prattling on about. Oh, he's coming all right. And an army of 200 million will be crushed. It says the flesh will fall off their bones and the eyes will melt out their sockets. That's the Jesus Christ that's coming back. Nothing much has changed in 6,000 years. If you go back in history, at the time of the Romans, there were four or five, I think, families that controlled the whole food production of the Roman Empire. Today we call them Tesco, Morrisons, Asda. Same thing. Nothing's changed. Homosexuality was rife. Same thing. They had armies going around duping people. Do the same thing today. Families were breaking down. Same thing today. I've often wondered how we can equate. We go into the family of God, and let's just say you personally are assigned to help. Oh, let's just take Mr. Monroe's left the room. We'll use him as a victim. He's an architect, right? He builds buildings. I don't think he likes sticking 138 people on an acre of land, but there you go. Let's just say God says, you go work with Job. Right? He doesn't know CAD. Doesn't know CAM. How are they going to get on? The fastest thing Job saw was an E-type donkey. We get on a plane and flies to Azerbaijan or someplace. Comes back. Designs a building. Goes back. Makes sure they build it sort of the right way, maybe. Hopefully. Where did Job travel to? Probably not very far. And yet, he can get in his car now and drive 200 miles in a couple of 3 hours. Not worry about it. We've got radio, we've got television, we've got videos, we've got MP3 players, MP4 players. Next year, MP5 players. They'll make the others extinct, so you've got to buy another one. Because nothing will work with them. What did Job have? A whole bunch of donkeys, a whole bunch of sheep, a whole bunch of goats, a whole bunch of cattle, a whole bunch of cows. Yet by today's standards, he was probably worth close on £1 billion. Job was a very wealthy man. But how are they going to equate? You see, the little bits of technology change, but people don't change. They are the same today as they were when those two were in the Garden of Eden. Same attitudes. Look at Cain. Bring an offering. God says, that's not acceptable. Why? I brought you my best leeks. God says, I want a little lamb. Sorry, you're not playing by the rules. He looks at his brother. He took a lamb, sniveling so-and-so. Next thing you know, what happens? No brother. Has anything changed? He might have used a rock to bash his head in. So today we do it much more. We get a 38-piece special and blow a hole through him. Same result, he's dead. The prophet Jeremiah had a similar problem to what we are going to be having. He lived in a doomed city. A city that God said he was going to destroy. You can make a note there. I'll turn if you want to read through it. Jeremiah 21 verse 8. And this is what God said to Jeremiah. You can imagine the city surrounded by this huge army, an army that was renowned for just destroying everything in its wake. And God says, "Now you shall say to this people, thus says the Eternal, behold, I set before you the way of life and the way of death." Does that sound familiar? Right back in Deuteronomy, "I set before you this day good and evil, life and death," and so on. Choose life. He said the same thing here. "He who remains in the city shall die by the sword, by famine, and by pestilence." Why? Because they stuffed 138 of them in an acre of ground. "But he who goes out and defects to the Chaldeans, he who is a traitor, effectively, who besiege you, he shall live, and his life shall be a prize to him." In other words, at the end time, you go through the Channel Tunnel and become, a captive, basically, and you'll live. Stay here, and you'll die. How would the British government react to that kind of message? If it goes that way. Which it could. Go, get on the train, go through the Channel Tunnel, and offer yourself over there to work in a factory and survive, or whatever. Basically as a slave, and you'll live. Stay here, and you'll die. They would brand you as a traitor. You could be hauled through the courts. The penalty for that kind of treason is still the death penalty in this country, as a matter of interest. As a result, Jeremiah ended up nearly close to losing his life. He was slung in prison. In fact, he spent quite a lot of it dumped in a cesspit. So, we look at the world we live in. This is the introduction, by the way. The world we live in, modern day Egypt, is a disaster looking for a time and place to happen. And hopefully, it's not far off. We live in a world full of lies and deception. We live in a world where sin is legalized and the sinner is protected by law. We live in a world of political correctness. We live in a world of multicultural madness. We live in a world where quoting the Bible becomes called hate speech. Yes? We live in a world of gay rights. We live in a world of abortion rights. We live in a world where increasingly we're being encouraged not to eat meat, because that means murdering animals. By the same group, PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, who support abortion on demand. Do you remember how many people died in 9/11? Around about 3,000 officially. Well, in America, that's how many die every day from abortions. Day after day after day. 40 million have been wiped out since the law was changed back in 1978. And nobody turns a hair. Why? When I went to Ambassador College in 1964, the word homosexual was not to be mentioned. You didn't say it. You might quietly refer to them as perverts. But the word homosexual had a ring to it. It was a bit like one or two of the sort of popular swear words, shall we say. Now, if you beat up a homosexual and you are hauled in front of the court, if it was a fight, you might get, say, 2 years in prison. But if you beat him up because he was a homosexual, you'll get double the punishment. They have rights way and beyond that of the ordinary citizen. In this country, by the way, as well as America. What demented mind says that it's wrong to kill an animal that God created for food, but it's okay to murder unborn babies whose destiny is to become born into the family of God? Are you starting to see where we're going? This is the demented, perverted mind that we're working on. And the greatest tragedy of all, most people have come to accept all this. That's what's the amazing bit. And why? I want to show you today how Satan uses lies and deception so that you know what to look out for. We're told that we are not ignorant of his devices. And I'll be honest with you, after 40 some years in the church, I thought I had him pretty nailed. I've learnt a lot this week. I want to show you that how the world got this way, not by chance, but as the result of a carefully orchestrated plan. The plan of Satan, And Satan's plan is to destroy mankind. All of it. That would be Satan's goal, to see this world a smouldering wreck with no human beings left. Because that would negate the whole plan of God. I've got news for him, it ain't going to happen. This book, if you wanted to buy this kind of book, it's freely available. It's called The Marketing of Evil. I did not get commission. It's written by a man called David, I think it's Capellian. He runs a website called WorldNet Daily that we quote quite regularly because he tries to get behind the news. There's a number of these people in this website. They analyze the news and they try and find out what's behind it. And they've come out with many things that a week later the rest of the newspapers start reporting on. And he has come up with this book where he's looked at the world and he's looked at the marketing blitz, buying the big lie, killer culture, multicultural madness, family meltdown, obsessed by sex, sabotaging our schools, the media matrix, blood confessions, and then a last hope. I want to go through some of the quotes just to give you the flavour of it, because he does show you that this didn't just happen. Over the last 40 years, the Western world's mind has been completely changed. If you stand up today and say homosexuality is against the law of God, you are a bigot. You are doing hate speech. And you can be slung in jail. And that's a fact. I'll be honest with you, I don't know where to start. It is so, so difficult. Unfortunately, an awful lot of it, or fortunately, I can't even read. Because there are little minds in this room that I don't want to corrupt. But he says, regarding the selling of gay rights, here's how it actually happened. Names and places and dates, how's that? Can't ask for anything better. He says, so let's take off the rainbow-coloured glasses and objectively explore this phenomenon we call gay rights. It grew out of the sexual liberation movement of the 60s. To be precise, June the 11th, 1969, the Stonewall Riot, when a group of homosexuals at New York's city Stonewall Inn resisted police commands to disperse, and it is widely regarded as the birth of the gay liberation movement. You're going to notice this 60s, keeping on coming up. I got to Ambassador College in September in 64. And one of the first sermons we got from Mr. Armstrong, he ripped the Beatles to shreds. Not the little ones that ran on the ground, the four that were prancing around with like suits, bow ties and haircuts. Remember them originally? And the Rolling Stones. And I think he must have gone through two lecterns that afternoon. He got rather violent, mentioning that this was the start of the age of rebellion. 40 years later, David Capellian gets up and says, the 60s were the start of the age of rebellion. Like I say, Mr. Armstrong is a tad ahead of his time. AIDS, originally called GRID. I didn't know that. It was called GRID. Gay-related immunodeficiency disease, until homosexual activists pressured the medical establishment to switch to the generic acronym AIDS, Acquired Immune Deficiency Syndrome, because this was the ultimate public relations nightmare. Because the minute you mention it, GRID, oh, it's gay, yeah, the bad. But somehow now it becomes acquired. Not quite so bad. Again, Mr. Hancock mentioned about words being polluted. You're going to see a lot of that. Through the 80s, he mentions, I haven't got time to read all of this, basically he's going on about AIDS infected, the death skyrocketed. Rock Hudson, 1985. Max Robinson, you'll be familiar to the American brethren, in 1988, he was a news anchorman. Rudolf Nureyev, the famous Russian ballet dancer. I saw him in London, by the way, and you know, we look at these people and we say, you know, and one or two of the press were deriding him a little bit. because it was known then that he had a boyfriend rather than a girlfriend. And to get away from it, he was standing next to a table, something the high as this one here, normal dining room table, and they were trying to make out that he was weak. And he just clicked his fingers, and this ballerina come tripping along, and she just seemed to step onto the table next to it. It was so graceful. She just thought, she's standing there. And he put his hand on the table, and she stood on his hand, and he lifted her up like that. And he says, "You think I'm weak?" And there was silence. See what he'd done? He cottoned on to the fact that somebody said that he was weak-headed. He did something which was fantastic. Great photo thing. Great photo shoot. Right? But what had he done? The question wasn't whether he was weak or whether he was strong. The question was whether he was a pervert or not. But he went sideways. "I'm strong." Nobody said, "Yeah, but you're a pervert." A few years later, he was dead. There was a couple of men who got together. They were graduates of Harvard University. Marshall Kirk and Hunter Madison. They got together. Kirk, a Harvard-educated researcher in neuropsychiatry. Have you ever noticed how people who want to confuse you always use words this long? No. Christ said, "God is love." One syllable. In neuropsychiatry, that sounds really good. Who worked at the John Hopkins study of mathematical precocious, worked with the John Hopkins study of mathematically precocious youth, right? Then what is clever? And designed aptitude tests for adults with 200 plus IQs. So this is a kind of a hot cookie, right? Top of his profession. Madison was a director in politics from Harvard, was an expert on public persuasion tactics and social marketing. Together they wrote, "After the Ball, How America Will Conquer Its Fear and Hatred of Gays in the 90s. It says, the bottom line of Kirk and Madison's master plan: "The campaign we outline in this book, though complex, depends centrally upon a program of unabashed propaganda, firmly grounded in long-established principles of psychology and advertising. Rule number one, change the words," Mr. Hancock said. Change the words. Simple case in point. Homosexual activists call their movement gay rights. This accomplishes two major objectives. One, use of the word gay rather than homosexual masks the controversial sexual behavior involved and accentuates instead a vague but positive sounding cultural identity. Gay, which after all meant happy. And two, describing their battle from the get-go, describing their battle from the get-go as one over rights implies homosexuals are being denied the basic freedoms of citizenships which others enjoy. You see the perversion? The question now is not, is it right or is it wrong? Is this guy getting his rights? You're getting rights, you're getting rights. Is he getting rights? Because he's got rights, isn't he? He's a citizen. So merely by using the term gay rights and persuading politicians and the media to adopt their terminology, actors of seeking to transform America have framed the terms of the debate in their favour almost before the contest began. It was the same with abortion. The minute you mention the word abortion, people back then would cringe. But when you start talking about choice, God says, that tree, fine. That tree is a no-no. Satan comes along and says, "You, which one do you like? That one's cool." You've now got the choice. You can make the laws. You can decide what you want to do. You'll become like God. Choice. Nothing new, is there? Same principle. The abortion vanguard correctly anticipated that it would be far easier to defend an abstract, positive-sounding idea like choice than the unrestricted slaughter of unborn babies. You see? It's words. It says, manipulating the emotions and thereby restructuring the thoughts and belief of a large number of people is what modern marketing is all about. I'll give you a classic thing that's just come up. I think it's on actually the news website. I apologize for the fact there's nothing up this week, but I've been playing the goats. It's been much more fun. How many of you know Ribena? I think we all do. It's a world drink full of vitamin C for your children. Wonderful, marvelous. Sell billions of liters of it. Smith GlaxoKline, or whatever they call themselves. They've made billions out of it. For 50 years, we've been indoctrinated. It's full of vitamin C. Until a couple of little girls, age 14 in New Zealand, bless their little hearts, did a science project. And they poured the stuff into the whatever they did the little scientific test. And guess what? Virtually no vitamin C. Did Smith, Klein, Glaxo know that? Yep. Have they been deceiving the whole world for the last 50 years? Yep. Are they in deep water? Oh, yes. It's going to cost them in New Zealand alone £1.5 million in fines. And I think when the rest of the world gets at it, they're really going to get clobbered. But you see, they're a drug company. That's another subject that you can go into in great depth. How they've controlled the world by putting the fear into them of bird flu. It's going to be an epidemic. It's just a matter of when it happens. You all need to stock up on our vaccine. And the world has spent several billion dollars stocking up on the vaccine. How many people have died in the whole world? 136, I think it was at the last count. Remember, they've got to murder 3,000 babies in the States today, right? And nobody cares a fig. But we've spent several billion dollars producing a vaccine which, when you take it, sends you nutty. Because they've been using it in Japan. And up to date, there are at least 50 cases of people like LSD in the old days. I can fly off a 50-story building. It doesn't work. It sends the mind completely dippy. Japanese government now is going to ban it. But the world has spent several billion dollars stockpiling this junk. Every 3 seconds as I'm speaking, a child is dying somewhere in the world for lack of food. Think how many lives could have been saved if that money had been spent that way, instead of going to the drug company. There's no deception in the world, is there? Staggering. I mean, Ribena to me was just such a classic thing. We've all given it to our kids. Brits full of vitamin C. And my blackcurrant jam's got vitamin C in it. That's all it's got in it, is blackcurrants and sugar. But how can they make a blackcurrant drink without getting vitamin C? Because blackcurrants are a rich source of vitamin C. Well, check the labels to how many blackcurrants are in it. Jamming. There's a term I've never heard before. Is psychological terrorism meant to silence expression of or even support for dissenting opinion? It's like during the war. We had systems here where we could send a signal towards a German radio station and kill its broadcasting capabilities, stop them broadcasting. This term is also used, which is perhaps the highest profile. You're going to hear this term more and more in the press now. It's starting to become used, so you know what it means. And perhaps the highest profile example of jamming occurred after the 1998 murder of University of Wyoming freshman Matthew Shepard. Lured from a bar, robbed and savagely beaten by two men, Shepard died 5 days later of head injuries. In the frenzied saturation media coverage that followed, the press and homosexual activists singled out conservative Christians as having created a climate of anti-gay hate in which such a brutal act could happen. switching the blame. It's not these guys, it's you. You Christians, you're causing this problem because of your stupid rules. You see how it turns? It says, consciously or not, the media was following Kirk and Madison's playbook to the letter, discrediting anyone who disagreed with the homosexual agenda by associating them with low-life murderers. In reality, none of the Christian groups smeared by the NBC, which is a major news broadcaster in the States, had ever condoned mistreatment of homosexuals. In fact, they had explicitly condemned it. In fact, many churches in the States, even today, have got work groups on the side where they try and help these people to overcome the problem. But you see, they've turned it round, twisting those words again. Homosexualizing history is another tool they use. You've probably heard this. Socrates, Eleanor Roosevelt, Tchaikovsky, Bessie Smith. I don't know who Bessie Smith is. Over in the States, you obviously do. This is more lined up with America. Alexander the Great, Alexander Hamilton, Leonardo da Vinci, Walt Whitman were homosexual or bisexual. It says, although the authors know these claims are unproven at best and often baseless, they refer to them as suspected inverts. That doesn't stop them from advocating the tactic. A recent example of this was the highly publicized, though utterly unsubstantiated, speculation that Abraham Lincoln was a homosexual. Even more outrageous was a suggestion by openly gay New Hampshire Episcopalian Bishop Gene Robertson. And just put two things in mind there. The guy is a pervert, and he's a minister in what is effectively the Church of England. A comment he quickly retracted after a firestorm of protests, that Jesus Christ was a homosexual. If he ever hears this, I've got a message for Mr. Gene Robinson. One day, we are all going to have to stand in front of Jesus Christ and give an account of what we've done. And I would not like to be in your shoes. It says the strategy is to jam homo-hatred. Another tactic is to jam homo-hatred by linking it to Nazi horror. It says most contemporary hate groups on the religious right will bitterly resent the implied connection between homo-hatred and Nazi fascism. But since they can't defend the latter, they end up by having to distance themselves by insisting they would never go to such extremes. You see, you're put in a position where although you know you're right, you've got to be careful what you say because you're going against the law of the land. It says such declarations of civility towards gays, of course, set our worst detractors on the slippery slope towards the recognition of fundamental gay rights. Homosexual actors love to compare their opponents with Adolf Hitler and Nazis, apparently undaunted by the fact, you see, they're into lies and deception, but they're undaunted by the fact that according to William Shearer's 1200-page The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich, widely regarded as the definitive book on Nazi Germany, many of the early Nazis were perverts. Homosexuals. Many of them, not a few. But this is not about truth. It's about manipulation. That's what we're living in. That's what we've got to fight daily. That's what we've got to come out of. This kind of mind-twisting, mind-numbing. It's incredible. Another thing that I did not know. That the one thing that they wanted to do, these two men, bearing in mind, we're talking top marketers here now, right, top men, practically in the genius sort of bracket, really. They looked at the whole thing, and here they've got something that is so bad, so low, so degrading, that they've got to get the public to accept. How do we do it? Well, we change the name. And the press kind of fell into line with it. And then they thought, the way to really get our message across is to control the press. How did Mr. Armstrong get his message across? Radio, television. Advertisements in newspapers. Millions of books. I mean, that U.S. and GB in Prophecy, was it 25 million copies? I think it was. 25 million copies. Read by, I don't know, directly between 3 and 5 people. So it's at least 100 million people have read that book. That's how you get the message out. That's what they did. So how do you convert journalists? You don't. You become journalists. You get these people and say, get into university, get a degree, get out there, infiltrate the media. Now they've got in the States. Thus, 1990 saw the launch of the National Lesbian and Gay Journalists Association, which has since grown into a formidable organization. It says to celebrate its 10th anniversary, I'm not joking now, please do not laugh, right? I read this several times and I thought to myself, you really are pulling my leg. To celebrate its 10th anniversary, homosexual journalists from many major news organizations gathered in San Francisco for their gala conference held on September the 7th to the 10th, 2000. The discussion on center stage was surreal. It focused on the question, not on whether what they were doing was perverted and against the law of God. It focused on the question of whether or not, when reporting on stories related to homosexuality, mainstream journalists have a responsibility to include any viewpoints that contradict those of homosexuals. And he says, you heard me right, he's got in brackets. You heard me right. They've got the press running so scared that whenever they report on anything that's anywhere like the homosexuality type thing, they backpedal. And it gets worse. I think we better skip on a little bit here, otherwise we're going to spend the whole time on this one section. One comment he says here, he says, we've forgotten one thing in all this. We've forgotten about reality. We have forgotten about reality. This is the world we live in. Mr. Bowles mentioned The Matrix the other day. For those of you who haven't seen it, it's a science fiction thing where everybody is actually basically living in the same state that the world is today. Totally controlled. Go into London, make a couple of phone calls, buy a couple of things with your credit card, use public transport, go on the underground, and somebody somewhere can plot exactly where you were every minute of the day. They can tell you what's in your bank account. They can tell you your home address. They know everything there is to know about you, if they really wanted to. It all came out with the bombing in London. Suddenly there was video footage from the camera that was in the bus. Who said anything about cameras in buses? Who said anything about cameras in trains? Why did they arrest the people so quickly? Because they had just miles and miles and miles and miles of video. So much so, they've got to rely on a computer to look at face recognition because they simply couldn't sit down. They couldn't get enough people in front of enough screens to screen all the videos. There's so many of them. It's unbelievable. We have forgotten about reality, he says. The world. We haven't. We are here to put God's law into our lives and to put sin out. They're there to put God's law out and put sin in. There is no grey area. It's one way or the other. You take it. This is why Mr. Armstrong went on. And I know we all, and I did, sat there, he's going agriculture again, back into trees. But there were two trees, not three. There was no bush in between them. There was the tree of life and the tree of death. And mankind chose the tree of death. And there's only one way out of it. And that's to repent, to believe, to be baptized, to receive the Holy Spirit. After God has personally handpicked you in the present age. And again, when we come to the millennium, God says, I'll pour my Spirit out on all flesh. Isn't that horrible? To these people it is. God says, I'll open all your minds. And you'll see what a bunch of idiots you've been for 6,000 years. You've tried everything. The Babylonians, the Medes, the Persians, the Romans. Where are their civilizations today? We go and see the ruins and think, oh, how did they build that? Fantastic. We forget the fact that the Roman Empire probably slaughtered more people than we care to remember. Where do we go next? We've got half an hour. It's difficult to know where to go. Gay rights, separation of church and state. We can just kill that one real quick. The modern day people would have you believe that America has always been built on greed and capitalism. That's what motivated us. That's what made us a great nation. No, it's not. The Pilgrim Fathers went there because they wanted religious freedom. And written into the Constitution is that the federal government of America cannot interfere in church. Cannot. And what have they done? They've taken the Ten Commandments off one courthouse because it might offend somebody. Of course, if you're a murderer, you're going to be offended. But that can't happen in England, can it? Oh, no. We're way above that in England. You Americans, you've lost it. We wouldn't do that. However, we were not allowed to publish the photograph of a known murderer recently because it might upset his personal rights. I always thought when you murdered somebody, you didn't have any rights. Killer culture. Multicultural. Let's do a bit of multicultural madness. How's that? There's a lot of that going around. How did multiculturalism start? Well, here he goes. Remember, too, this is a man who's not, to my knowledge, in the church. He makes certain comments in here that leads me to believe he doesn't really belong to any church, but he believes in God. And he believes that God's law is the base, should be the basis of a society. Right? One of the first times I remember feeling the foundations of America tremble was in 19, guess when? 64. During my 9th grade civics class, a girl, I don't remember her name, but I think she was from Tennessee, and she had a very thick southern accent, answered a question from the teacher by mentioning something about God. How do you know there is a God? The teacher shot back. It was like an earth tremor. Just a faint quiver, really, a precursor to the tidal wave to come in a few years later. A smiling, casual, offhand swipe at the world as we knew it. How did the little southern girl know there was a God? Clearly taken aback, she answered the teacher earnestly, incredulously, her voice breaking, because there is! She had quite naturally offered up the best answer anyone could possibly give. Because there is. As I said the other day, you know, God doesn't say, no, I'm a hypostasis. Nobody can really understand what I am, you know, but I am here. Now, I'll trim my beard so I'm nice and neat and tidy when you come to see me on Sunday, you know. And I'm sorry my son looks a little bit like one of those people we were talking earlier, and he's got long hair and he shouldn't have, but you know what these boys are like. I tell you. Now you can see why God has got to wipe most of the people off the face of this planet. Because they are so perverted, so degenerate, so far away from God, there is no way God could get them into his kingdom without resurrecting them into paradise in the white throne judgment period, pouring out his Holy Spirit on them, taking Satan out of the way, and then re-educating them. And if you think that's going to be easy, just think of it. Why is it 100 years? We've just been down the farm. It's a lovely valley. The green's all coming on the trees. The field is full of little lambs bouncing around on springs by the looks of it. The barn's full of beautiful little goats, all silky and smooth and going crazy for food and wine if you're the old boy. It's quiet. You can sit there and you can hear the water down the valley running over the rocks. There's a bird over there, there's a bird over here, there's one down by your feet. It's peace. It's not perfect, but I defy you to find anything much better in this world. But these people are going to be resurrected into a whole world that has been made like the Garden of Eden. And how long is that going to take? It's going to take 1,000 years. That's why the millennium's a millennium. It's going to take 1,000 years to build enough houses, and not 138 to the acre, to get enough cattle and sheep in the field, fruit on the trees, veggies in the ground, So that when every person is resurrected, they've got clothes, they've got a roof over their head, they've got food, and then we start the education process. And to do that, Satan's got to be out of the way, and everybody has got to have God's Spirit. Because without God's Holy Spirit, you can't understand this book. It's totally impossible. I always use the example of Mr. Bullinger, who wrote the Companion Bible, which I really do like. And he's got all sorts of comments on the column about the different verses and the different words and where they're used and all that. It's very, very exciting. And when you come to the bit about the Trinity, he actually nails it. And he says, this bit was added by a monk in the 16th century in the margin. And then somewhere else you read, he talks about the Blessed Trinity. Did he get it? Nope. It's only mentioned there. And that's obviously been added. I saw a thing the other day, somebody sent me, Anna sent me a video on a man who was going on about Bible translations. Very erudite. And by and large, quite correct. But he got most upset by a modern translation that somehow missed that little bit out, because it wasn't in the original. He was so upset that the Trinity wasn't there, because that's the basis of Christianity. Hold on a minute, it wasn't there! And yet it's the basis of Christianity. What does that tell you about Christianity? It's a farce. It's a deception. It's a lie. And there's a billion people on this planet following that religion. And the only person in that religion at the moment, shock horror, who's trying to apply some of the principles to mankind, lives in Rome. And we all don't need to go down that road. We know where he's going. The direction he's taking that particular group. To where eventually the whole world will be deceived into believing that he's the only one that's got something solid. Now try fighting that one. But he's got his whole civil government against him. The Laodicean church really don't know what they're up against. They don't know what they're in for. The teacher had questioned the unquestionable, injecting doubt into a room of impressionable young boys and girls. It was one of those moments you remember 40 years later, because it created a spark, a momentary contact with another dimension, that alien dimension of cynicism and disbelief. Is there a God? I'm just asking. And those children then grow up. And Mum and Dad says, right, come on guys, Sunday, church. They go to the High Church of England, it smells and bells. They go down to the happy clappy lot and they all jump around and have a great time. Maybe you want to be a Pentecostal and roll about on the floor foaming at the mouth and speaking in gibberish. Whatever their brand of Christianity is, whatever it was, they look at it and say, well, is there a God? That's how it's planted. It's planted with the youth. And as the youth grow up, if somebody can question that, and after all, what is a teacher? To young children, a teacher's basically like God. If Miss says it's this, that's the way it is. And you'll have your child come home and argue with you. Yes? The teacher said, and Dad didn't say that. And then you've got an awful job trying to get it straight. Their mind, especially up until they're seven. So Mr. Armstrong always quoted that Catholic teacher who said, give me a child until he's seven and he's a Catholic for life. He points out, for example, bearing in mind this is schools, he points out, for example, to the remarkable change in attitude towards Christopher Columbus between 1892 and 1992. Though not a single new fact about Columbus's life and exploits had been uncovered, the country's mood swung from one of uncritical adulation to one of loathing and condemnation. Why? At least among the members of the intellectual class. The change was accomplished by the aggressive ideology of multiculturalism. The Columbus turnabout is merely a specific instance of more general alterations in our moral landscape. In other words, Christopher Columbus didn't go there to discover America. He went there to enslave it. He went there to take European way of life over there and enslave the local people and take advantage of them and exploit them. Capitalism, blah, 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 blah. Nothing changed to poor old Christopher Columbus. He went out there not knowing where he was going. When he got there, he didn't know where he was. And when he came back, he didn't know where he'd been. But look at the rumpus he managed to create. The moral inversion caused by multiculturalism, which proclaims that all cultures are equal, has extended to virtually every area of society. All religions are equal. I might add, except one. All religions are equal. Witches and Satanists are now afforded the same respect as Christians and Jews. There was a thing happened recently where a Satanist aboard a Royal Navy frigate was allowed to hold a, what do they call it, church service using his black arts because it was his right. All life is equal. A rat is a pig, is a dog, is a boy. This is your petter. Your people for the ethical treatment of animals. Animal liberationists do not separate out the human animal, so there is no rational basis for saying that a human has any special rights. A rat is a pig, is a boy, is a dog. They're all mammals. Now, when you accept that little bit, that two or three lines, it changes the whole way you look at the world, doesn't it? I can't read all of this quote, because it does describe abortion, so we'll just insert the word there. He says, okay, let's get it straight. No one has the right to tell another person that it's wrong to kill a baby. Describes the whole thing here, of course. Right. Except the mother. It's the mother's choice. Right? Because at that age, it's not a person. It's a mammal. It's a bunch of cells. That's the way they look at it. But it's everyone's duty and moral responsibility to stop killing chickens, pigs and fish and everything else. So what they're saying is, we'll protect all the fish and the mustn't fish out of fish in the river. So all the disciples got that one, didn't they? And so did Christ, because I ate fish. And they'd eat the Passover lamb, so they were eating lamb. So what does that say about Christ, you see, and the disciples? See, they were all wrong. And who's right? Well, Peter. You see? Pro-life. It simply is so difficult. Here's a classic one. One of the worst air disasters in recent history. Egypt Air Flight 990 crashed into the Atlantic Ocean shortly after takeoff from New York on October 1999, killing 217 passengers and crew. I remember that. And it was like a mystery because the plane just took off and did a power dive straight into the sea. And nothing was much heard about it, apart from a few people in the know spread stories that were totally discredited at the time. Suicide? To most, mass murder or terrorism would better describe the wanton annihilation of these people. Yet despite the fact the co-pilot had calmly repeated over and over the Arabic phrase, can't even pronounce it, it means I rely on Allah, for almost a minute and a half during his deed, he evidently knocked the pilot unconscious, put the throttles on full, and put the plane in a power dive straight into the ocean. And here he is saying, I rely on Allah. The world never knew this until 2 years after the event. It says, although he said this for almost a minute and a half during his deed, and that such behaviour, according to the report, is not consistent with the reaction that would be expected from a pilot who is encountering an unexpected or uncommanded flight condition. I can imagine that. The federal report steered clear of suggesting jihad or terrorism as a motive. I know elsewhere it says there is not the press, this is Reuters now, very respected news agency, telling their correspondents that there was no advantage to be gained by describing what happened on 9/11, the destruction of the Twin Towers and the death of 3,000 plus people as terrorism. In fact, he says, Stephen Jukes, Reuters global head of news, big chief, decreed that the giant wire services 2,500 journalists, they've got 2,500 journalists around the world, should not use the T word unless in a direct quote. We all know that one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter, and that Reuters upholds the principle that we do not use the word terrorist. The terrorist here is the clock. To be frank, it adds little to call the attack on the World Trade Center a terrorist attack. It leaves you speechless. It goes into marketing it. It says, isn't it obvious? Since the 1960s, here we go again, America, from a government to her schools and even to her churches, has steadily fallen away from the Judeo-Christian values that previously illuminated and gave life and strength to the nation's institutions. It's even on the banknotes, in God we trust. Everybody else pays cash. Yeah. This is the equivalent of turning out the country's lights. You see, we have the American Constitution and we have the Word of God. And the American Constitution establishes the Word of God. It protects it. It stops the government interfering with it. Who's changed it? The lawyers. Who gave Jesus Christ all the grief when he was on earth? You guessed it. The lawyers. And then Paul says, if any of you have anything against each other, do you go to lawyers? If you live down in the West Country, you know, lawyers sounds a bit like liars. Liars. Very little difference in the sound, isn't it? I've sat in on business meetings where lawyers have sat down and worked out how to get around the law or to break it without being caught. And I see somebody else nodding. Do you want to go to a lawyer? Have you ever been to a dentist who said, this isn't going to hurt me? You know, as he gets at work with you with a drill. He says, this is the equivalent of turning out the country's lights. And when you turn out the lights, everything looks the same in the dark. That is multiculturalism. Jeremiah 16 verse 12. Let's just read that one. Jeremiah 16. I scribbled that in, so it must be important. Oh, yes. I want you to think about something here. There was a generation in the 60s that were into flower power, LSD, mind-altering drugs, is God dead, and all that lot, right? Bear in mind that their children are today's world. Okay? So they were the fathers. And then we have the children. Jeremiah 16 verse 12. You have done worse than your fathers, for behold, each one walks according to the imagination of his own evil heart, so that no one listens to me, God says. You have done worse than your fathers. So if you look back at what happened in the 60s, when we were expecting everything to blow up in the 1972, we were all going to flee. That was kindergarten. That was the fathers. And he says, you, this generation, have done worse than your fathers, because each walks in according to his imagination of his own evil heart. I'll decide what's right, and I'll decide what's wrong. Isn't that a new concept? It's 6,000 years old. Nothing's changed. There's just more of them now. Therefore, and here's the end result of it, I will cast you out of this land, into a land that you do not know, neither you nor your fathers, and there you will serve other gods day and night, and where I will show you no favour. That's very close to happening. And I could go on. The meltdown of the family. Why are there, estimated in Los Angeles, 150,000 youngsters involved in gangs in one American city? Because there's no dad. Why are there no dads? Well, there are a number of reasons. I haven't got time to read it, I'll just paraphrase it. Who is sponsoring all this divorce? You might say, well, it's the irretrievable breakdown of a marriage. The government is sponsoring divorce. Shock, horror. When Stalin came to power, the first thing he did was he issued a decree that all you had to do was to divorce your wife, was to write a little note and take it down to the local court and say, I divorced my wife. That was it. They went to the book, they altered it, and she was divorced and kicked out on the street. Adolf Hitler wanted to break up the family. Why? Because when the government break up a family, they take control of that family. And that's what it's all about. Did any of you go to a government school? Of course not. You went to a public school, didn't you? It's called a public school. It's called a public library. It's called public transport. Why? Because public sounds like it's for us. No, it's not. It's government transport. It's government school. It's government library. It's government health service. Control. And that's what Satan wants. Because when you control people, and you control people who haven't got this word built into them, you've got absolute control and you can do what you want. Recently our Chancellor got up and he said, I'll knock 2p off income tax, and they all clapped. They didn't remember, he just said he'd taken away the bottom rate, which means that, in actual fact, the people on the top rate are pretty much the same as they probably were, give or take a few pounds, but the poor people at the bottom end are losing out money. Why? Because there's possibly an election coming up within the next 12 months, and he wants people to vote. That's multiculturalism. We could go on to, divorce thing. When somebody gets divorced, it's virtually automatic that the wife gets control of the children, right? Why? Because in America, the vast majority of people who help sort out marriage problems are feminists. They are man haters. The woman is very rarely ever given a choice. She's encouraged, in actual fact, in the divorce process. Because then they all come in, don't they? The lawyers, the liars. They're in there, thousands of dollars in fees. Then you've got the psychotherapists and the family people and the child, this, that, and the next thing. And it's a whole industry. In fact, this man claims that over half the legal wranglings in the states and the courts and everything else is over divorce. And once you're divorced, the state basically takes over the family. And when there's no father about, the boys particularly have got no role model. So they get their own role model. I could go into the obsession with sex. For those of you who are of the later generation, there was a report came out in 1948 by Dr. Kinsey, who changed, he's called the father of the sexual revolution. It's now been proven that he was a sexual psychopath. And that some of the data that he collected, nobody actually worked out how he could have got it. Especially since it involved young children. Right? Nobody even questioned it. Had they questioned it, they'd have hung him back then. But it was what people wanted. It's still quoted in the courts. The homosexuals. He quoted that 10% of the population was homosexual. Which is a total lie. And I could go into the whole thing with abortion, where the man who started the whole thing off in the States, in the end, turned turtle and came back and said, no, we can't do this. But already he'd set it in motion. And he admits that what was given to the press, that 10,000 women a month or something were dying because of backstreet abortions, the actual figure was about 100. But the press got it. Big story. Sells newspapers. That's how it goes. The whole society, and this is what I'm trying to get at, whether it's marriage, whether it's the media, whether it's the schools, whether it's the family, whether it's this multicultural stuff that's going around, whether it's church and state, whether it's marketing, whether it's building buildings, farming land, it's all Satan's world. And it's all based on lies, It's based on deception, and it's based on a totally warped reality. And what I find amazing is that this man, at the end of his book, this is a man, again, who's out in the world, who I would rather imagine doesn't have God's Spirit from some of the things that he says. He's looked at this, he's analysed it, and if you've got a weak heart, I wouldn't read this book, because I've really felt like throwing it away several times when you read of what's going on in the world. He said, he's talking about there is a chance. There's just a slight chance that we can save the world. And he says, how will it happen? He said, it'll happen, dear friends, when we all simply go to our rooms, close the door, take a deep breath, and take a good, long, hard, honest look at ourselves. And then, quietly, humbly, and fervently, we ask the living God for help, for insight, for direction, for salvation. We go to God and ask him to help us to put his law into our lives, to help us put sin, to display sin, so that we can, in the very near future, teach all these people who are totally, totally deceived today, the way to life, and not, as they're going today, the way of death.